We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day?
Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment. I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to the Laker Film Room Podcast. I'm Pete, joined by Darius and Mike. The Nuggets hold serve in game one with a 114-103 victory and open up some old wounds for the Lakers. Started out well, though. It started out a little differently than last season's series did. Lakers come out, play well out of the gates, especially LeBron. LeBron has an excellent first quarter. I think he had 10-5 or 12-5 in that quarter. And he kind of saw the whole array, had him coming off of the zoom action on each side of the court, where he hit a three off of a screen on one side, then another three on off of a handoff from AD on the other, got Jamal Murray on a switch and posted him up for a layup. And meanwhile, on the other end, the Lakers are doubling hard on Jokic and flying around on those rotations. If you listen to our preview pod, the first like 16 minutes of this game were exactly what I wanted in terms of the stuff I wanted to see us doing. Trapping, flying around, we're boxing out, rebounding well. At first, D'Lo has a good first shift. I thought he hit, even though he didn't hit a three, he hit three of his shots before having a disastrous rest of the game. But yeah, Lakers come out well in the first quarter, and we have a change to the rotation. LeBron plays the whole first quarter, and we come out to start the second quarter with AD and Hayes out there, and I could almost cry. And not only that, we're blitzing Jamal Murray and using Jackson as a perimeter defender, which is great in concept, but I do have some thoughts on that a little bit later, and just some more stuff in that family overall. But they're blitzing, they're playing very well. LeBron gets a steal and a breakaway, puts the Lakers up 49-37. And then right after that timeout, Denver goes on a run. And then to start the third quarter, LeBron hits a big three to send us into halftime. Lakers up 3, 60-57. And then the offensive woes for the Lakers really turn up in the second half. Denver makes a couple adjustments, and the Lakers really get out of sorts on a couple of plays. And they give up another big run in the third that I thought was kind of the decisive run in terms of determining who won that game. They battle back and forth for a bit through the fourth. I thought AD was phenomenal throughout the game. LeBron started well, but I thought faded as the game went on and had seven turnovers. But yeah, Mike, another loss to the Nuggets. I've got some thoughts on us before I get into the Nuggets matchup, but I'll wait for that to wheel back around to me. What are the top headlines for you coming out of game one?
Well, I thought they lost the game on the defensive glass, 15 offensive rebounds for Denver to just six for the Lakers. And, you know, that helps them take 102 shots to the Lakers 79. Part of that is also the Lakers took a bunch more free throws, but just giving that offense that many more opportunities. Mm-hmm. And so that's one thing. But if you're going to give up offensive rebounds, then at least you're thinking, okay, well, you're not going to lose the transition game as much, though, because they're crashing and maybe you can get out in transition. But instead, the Nuggets also win the fast break points battle. So 21-14 there, some big transition.
And Lakers were up early on that, Mike. Lakers were ahead like 10-2 to start in fast break points.
Yeah, they were running early. And then in the second half, I think they had maybe two fast break points, and Denver just kind of runs away with it. So those are, you can't lose both of those areas. And I thought that the missed shots, whatever, like, of course, the Lakers are going to need to miss shots, but I'm not somebody to look at like D'Angelo's game. And well, that's why they lost, because Russell took 9 threes. Most of them I thought were pretty decent shots. Russell was actually a plus two somehow. And so to me, Jokic is the number one problem, period, in the whole league. So I'm never going to say there's a point of emphasis that's not because of Jokic. Jokic is why Denver wins. But to me, the second reason is Aaron Gordon. And the Lakers made their big push when Aaron Gordon got his second foul and left midway through the first quarter. And then Gordon returned and the Lakers were up 10. There was like another minute goes by. LeBron gets a bucket. They're up 12. And then the Nuggets blitz comes out of that next timeout. And then they kind of run away with the rest of the second quarter. They run away with the third quarter. Aaron Gordon finishes plus 20, best in the game. He just doesn't let the Lakers have the advantages with that they have against a lot of teams. And he creates a lot of problems for them with his size and with his just being around in that dunker spot when Jokic is doing all of the things that he does. And I just have not seen an answer for Gordon in these last couple of years now. On top of course, again, Jokic being the number one thing. So that is my summary. Like the offensive glass, which Gordon has a lot to do with. He had 6 offensive rebounds. The fast break points, the Lakers not running back, especially in the second half. And then that size situation that the Lakers can't seem to get past, where they're the only other big they can go to is like Jackson Hayes to increase his minutes. They're bringing, you know, Dinwiddie and Prince and Vincent, like those are the players they're bringing off the bench. And it's not been enough to handle what Denver is doing size-wise with Gordon and Jokic.
One more thing to add to Mike's possession point, 2D, is we also lost the turnover battle. The whole Nuggets starting lineup turned the ball over once combined. 0 turnovers for Jokic with how much he holds the ball. How much he handles the ball. So when you combine that with the rebounding problem, I think there was like a 17 possession difference. And if you give the other team that many more possessions, especially as good as Denver, you're going to get killed.
You are. And when LeBron talked about the margin for error being thin, and he said that basically after every Nuggets game. And it's because of examples just like what happened in game one. So you guys hit all of the top line items. I will circle back to Russell a little bit. I agree, Mike, that the Lakers don't lose necessarily because he shot poorly. I will point out his shot volume, though. So I was actually pleased by the end of the game that he kept shooting, because you don't want a player to shrink from the moment when they're missing as many shots as Russell was missing. But there was a point where I texted the thread and I said, Russell's taken 15 shots and only 5 of those are threes. Now that balanced out towards the end of the game. He ended up taking 9 threes out of his 20 field goals, and that's a much better ratio for him. But I thought his ratio for most of the game was out of whack, that he was hunting too many two-point shots. And AD was great, which you mentioned, but I don't recall D'Lo hitting AD with a pass in the pocket maybe more than once or twice all game. And that's if it even happened once or twice.
And that's been a staple throughout the season.
It's been a key part of the Lakers offense in terms of the screen roll balance that exists between D'Lo and AD. And so I thought D'Lo got into too many situations where he overpenetrated and he shot the little floater, and that floater did not fall at a high enough rate to get the Lakers the points that they needed in the half court. The Lakers are going to need to be a better half-court offense against the Nuggets, and they're going to need to be a better rebounding defensive team in the half-court against the Nuggets. Denver is going to find ways to push the ball. They have 5 players who are comfortable bringing the ball up, and they're too good of a defensive rebounding team to say, we're going to shut off your water and transition the entire game. You would literally have to crash no one, and when the shot goes up, everyone would need to be running back, and that's just not natural for any basketball team, much, much less a Lakers team that will linger in the front court for a little bit too long. I think the Lakers are going to have to live with some transition inequities from Denver. In order to shift that back in their direction, they're going to need to rebound better themselves, and they're going to need to rebound more cleanly. So the defensive rebounds the Lakers were getting were not clean defensive rebounds, and they were having to cover up the ball a fair amount and not get out and run in transition. One of the things that you didn't mention in terms of LeBron's strong first half, Pete, was how often he was running in the open court and running free. Now, that doesn't always lead to a layup at the basket, but what it does do is pick up the pace against a Denver defense that if you let them get set and let them get organized, they are too big and too organized and too together from all of these years of experience to make mistakes, and they're not going to beat themselves. And the way that you beat a defense like that is by getting to them before they are set. And again, that doesn't mean scoring at the basket at will in transition. You're not going to necessarily do that against this team, but driving and kicking, penetrating early in order to collapse the defense and create better shots, the Lakers need to do more of that. They scored 104 points or whatever they scored, 106 points. That's not enough. And so they need to be better both in the half court, but also understand the correlation between defensive rebounding and transition and early offense. And I think that's the other high level point I want to make sure that we're focusing on, because it is going to be easy to say, like, what do you do with Jokic and what do you do with Murray? And I get all that stuff, but the Lakers do need to work on themselves a little bit here too.
I'm so glad you said that, because I have points to make on that front, and I'll do that on the other end of the break.
Hey guys, Trudell here. What's going on with your teeth? I ask because mine are feeling and looking great, thanks to Dr. Jonathan Gabay. Dr. Gabay is a lifelong Lakers fan. Example, when I first met him, we were discussing Phil Jackson's preferred second unit in 2009, so he knows his stuff. Then I walked into his state-of-the-art office in Beverly Hills, and it is nice. It's like a relaxing spa. It's got TVs in the ceiling that connect to your headphones so you can watch shows while you get your dental work done. They even give you this calming hot-scented towel on your face. If you have a healthy mouth, Dr. Gabay can keep it that way. He also specializes in cosmetic transformations, including veneers, crowns, Invisalign, and implants. Dr. Gabay works with his own in-house lab in Beverly Hills, so you know exactly what you're getting. Tell them that Mike Trudell sent you, and you'll get a full consultation, including 3D x-ray, for free. That's a $950 value. So if you're in the Los Angeles area and you need a dentist you can trust, call Dr. Gabay, the official dentist of the Laker Film Room podcast, at 310-707-1005 or visit bhsmile.com.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
So in the lead up to game one, one of the comments that caught my ear most prominently was from Gabe Vincent in media availability when asked, how do you beat these guys, right? What's the what do you need to do? And one of the things that's interesting from hearing players speak is it's a first person experience for them. So they talk about it in a different way than an analyst does. And one of the thing that Gabe focused on is you can't get bored with the game. You have to be able, like one of the things that Denver does really well is that when you have those lulls, those mental lapses, those plays where you make mistakes and don't maintain your concentration, they will punish you. And I thought that was all over this game. Lakers go up by 12, 49-37, if I remember correctly, in that second quarter. And this is what happens coming out of that timeout. First, you start out and I think that each of these plays, all of whom the stars are the culprits here, but it is not just the stars. This is a team-wide type of thing that we've seen throughout the season, but I think it's indicative of a bigger problem in that So we come out of the timeout. LeBron is matched up with Michael Porter Jr. on in the right corner. And what happens is LeBron loses him. He loses attachment. He turns his head, doesn't keep an arm on him. And MPJ relocates around the screen. And LeBron's like, oh, shit, but it's too late. He can't catch up. But it's because he wasn't paying attention. He didn't. He had his head turned that MPJ gets that separation. Come back down on the other end. LeBron picks up an illegal screen foul on an Austin screen. I thought that was more of a good play by Reggie Jackson than it was anything LeBron did wrong necessarily. But come back down the other end. Dinwiddie gets a good defensive play on Jackson. And so the next play down, AD tries to attack Michael Porter Jr. And it's in this early offense type of situation that you were talking about a moment ago, D. And he just kind of slams the ball or slams his body into MPJ and coughs it up. But he starts this transition play ahead of Jokic. But AD jogs back and Jokic sprints. And so what happens is Jokic, despite starting the play behind AD, finishes it ahead of him. Austin picks him up, and but that's a massive mismatch, right? Austin matched up on a rim run with Jokic, and Austin is fronting him. And so Spencer Dinwiddie is the weak side low man, and he sees this. And I loved that he had a certain degree of, like, you got to know where Jokic is at and where the threat is. And so he, understandably so, way over helps in that direction. Aaron Gordon has the ball, sprays it out to the weak side corner guy, Reggie Jackson, that Dinwiddie was guarding. Open three, he hits that. Quick 6 points. Then the next time down, LeBron throws a pick six. Pick six for a turnover, Aaron Gordon dunk. It's a 3 or 4 point game at that point, and it's a whole new ball game. And each one of those mistakes are attention or effort mistakes, right? It is. And so it's about the ability to sustain. That's my first point about this that I want to make, guys, is that, like, unlike last year, the Lakers actually have tape now on how to beat the Nuggets, quote unquote. They got to do what they did for the first 16 to 18 minutes of that game. Now, does that mean that they will beat the Nuggets if they play that way? No, but it's how they got up by 12. That was the first time, aside from game four last year, where really the series was already over, that the Lakers controlled most of a first half. And so to me, the answers of the how to do it are so much in those moments. What bothers me about it is how much new we're doing in the playoffs. So, for example, one thing that Denver does when Rui is guarding Jokic a ton is they go to way more pick and roll with Jokic than they do in other situations. And what that does is it puts Rui in a drop coverage. How often this season has Rui been in a drop coverage? Not very often. How often this season have we played two big lineups with Jackson Hayes blitzing? Not very often. And there were a couple of possessions within that where guys are talking to each other. Like, we had a blow by where Jokic had a dunk. There was another play where, like, and it was really good where we blitzed and DeAndre Jordan got the ball at, like, the free throw line. But there's this sort of moment of hesitation of, like, do I recover here or not? And, like, doing new things in the playoffs that you don't have reps on, that's part of the, like, it was such a squandered regular season in a lot of ways to, like, get reps doing the different looks, the different things, have different tools in your bag so that come playoff time, you have those things available. And that's just something that we didn't have. And so to me, Mike, the ability to sustain, to be able to play that way for longer stretches of time, have fewer dips, every team's going to have them. And this is an argument that you make, but we, whenever we play really well, this has been a big part of the personality of the team. The Lakers will give up a quick 10-0 run in 90 seconds because no one's really doing their job. It's like very unserious basketball. And against Denver, that's just, it's suicide.
I can't debate any of that. Those are all good points. I still will return because we didn't discuss it after I mentioned it too much, but the rebounding. So here are the last three games between the Lakers and Nuggets rebounding. Game one, 49-40 for Denver, 15-6 offensive. March 2nd, 47-31 Denver, 11-6 offensive.
Man.
February 8th, 50-39 Denver, 14-10 offensive. I don't care about all the other little things in the game and the moments where LeBron.
Well, that's part of the reason why we give up that up is because we're not sandwich rebounding. We're not, like, doing the job. But yes, we have to rebound better, but it's part and parcel.
Sure. Okay. Let me rephrase. They are related. But ultimately, the Lakers are, they don't have enough either. Whether it's attention to detail or just maybe just size. They just don't have enough. They don't, sure. They're not. And the answer in the way that they've been playing and winning games has been consistent, but it doesn't work against Denver. It just doesn't. Like, they have beaten basically every team in the NBA. Sacramento's another discussion. I think if the Lakers played with this type of attention to detail they played the last couple of weeks, that they could beat Sacramento once But other than that, they cannot beat Denver, and it's been routine. And so that's the question that I've been sort of spamming. And, you know, the answers are, well, you know, you got to box somebody out. But like AD will answer, well, yeah, other guys you need to box out. But then what Denver ends up doing, Austin Reeves is trying to box Aaron Gordon out right on the baseline. And he just goes right
over
the top.
Those aren't the plays I'm talking about, though. Because, Mike, you already know that you're going to give up some of those. Where it's like for example, we were giving up, we were in foul trouble for a decent amount of the first quarter because we were trying to hit a guy that was bigger than us. But we were winning because of that. We stopped doing those sorts of things. Those are not the type of plays where it's like, hey, you put a body on, Rui puts a body on Jokic, and then Austin tries to sweep in, but oh, Jokic is so freaking good as a rebounder, he puts it back. That's going to happen. That's not the plays that I'm talking about. But there's a ton of like, do your job type of plays that they don't do it.
Yeah. So I guess I'll get off the rebounding thing after this one, but.
Oh, don't.
It reminds me a little bit of earlier in the season. And the first 50 games, and there's a lot of time on the floor where it's Prince, Reeves, and Russell. And so it's like, well, LeBron and AD better rebound. They better rebound their asses off. They're also supposed to do everything else. And like, this is one of those matchups where, like, I get it. If you're hitting a ton of threes, and in this case, that's where you point back to the Russell was 1-for-9. Reeves just didn't get a lot of opportunities. Like LeBron had the ball a lot. AD had the ball a lot more than he usually does and took him a lot more shots than he usually does. So between if AD and D'Lo are going to combine for almost like 45 shots or whatever it is, that's going to take some away from Austin. Certainly.
Rui too.
But like if you're and Rui and it, but if you're not like, yes, Rui could rebound more, but he had Jokic a lot. And I think that's especially for Rui, like that's a lot. And then wait, you also want me to go rebound and deal with Aaron Gordon. So I don't know that the player is there on the roster other than just indexing more towards Jackson Hayes, which, you know, Hayes, when they blitzed Murray, made a couple of mistakes, you know, and one time he lost somebody in the weak side. Another time he reached in on Jordan instead of letting him just sort of like Jordan in the short role, which seems to be a great solution. It's like you would just refer to, Pete, they haven't had the reps of with those types of units to really be able to trust that. So that, that to me is just something that I don't yet have a great answer for it, but I don't know how that doesn't happen again in game two. I don't know how Denver doesn't win the rebound battle again in game two.
One of the reasons why Austin ends up boxing out Aaron Gordon is when he gets screened and then they get into switches. And when you trap and then you have to rotate and how you end up on different players, right? And so if the Lakers are going to play a trapping, switching scheme, then guess what? Your guards are going to end up having to box out bigger dudes. Rui defending Jokic naturally means that on the plays where they flow action away from Jokic, they do it purposefully so that Jokic ends up at the block. And then guess what? Rui is in a one-on-one box out situation against Jokic. And even if you try to sandwich rebound against Jokic, you try to sandwich with a dude who is similar sized as him on one side. And then the smaller dude is going to have to come in and be like the end of the bread, which is the smaller piece of bread. But hey, I'm going to get up there and I'm going to do my job. But if it's two small dudes, then, or if it's two much smaller human beings than Nikola Jokic, and he's a massive human being, then he's able to reach up and just grab the ball. It's a very similar phenomenon to when it's Austin Reeves and Spencer Dinwiddie trying to sandwich rebound against Aaron Gordon.
Right.
Those dudes are not big enough against him. And so one of the things that Pete mentioned is the Lakers were playing so hard at the start of the game, and yes, they were fouling, and I was happy that they were fouling.
Yeah.
The Nuggets ended up shooting 6 free throws, I think.
And that's a huge controversy, I know, on like Twitter. But it's like, people don't watch our games that closely. It's like, we don't play good enough defense to foul, which is a strange thing to say. But it's like, we're giving up unguarded shots half the time.
They're purposely trying to not foul. The Lakers do not foul shooters. So this is the thing. Is that now maybe every team gets away with some fouls on shooters.
Oh,
and so that's not the point I'm making here. I'm saying the Lakers purposefully do not foul shooters. They need to foul off of the ball as much as they fouled in the first quarter and a half.
Yes.
Against the Nuggets. Against the third, in the third and the fourth quarter, they stopped fouling. And it was to their detriment to stop fouling because the Nuggets ran free way too much. And when you let this team run free, especially Murray and Porter and KCP, they are going to run free right into the exact shots that they are comfortable making. And credit Denver, when the Lakers started to trap and they started to trap Jokic, they knew where the rotation was coming from. It was coming from the top. I'm saying off of the trap.
Right.
So it was the top players who were rotating out and you were bumping up. And the guy who came off of the trap, his job was to recover opposite side. He's running now away from the action in order to try to recover because everyone is bumping up. What Denver started to do, and this was super smart of them, is that they started to drag the top player, the release valve player, more and more towards where the trap was coming from in order to make that first rotation as long as possible. And they were stretching out the Lakers' rotations more and more in order to make it so that that last recovery on the backside was harder. And then that player is typically going to be a smaller guard because he's the one who's trapping. And then he ends up on Aaron Gordon, who's in the weak side dunker spot. That's who you end up rotating to. And that's how he gets 6 offensive rebounds. And so there is a physicality element to this, but there's also an athleticism thing at play here. And I want to go to break here. And when I come back, I'm going to advocate for my dude another time because I do think it's important. And I'm just going to make the point again because I don't care. Jackson Hayes did not get a second half shift. If I recall,
he didn't.
He was a +2. He played 4 minutes and he played in the unit with AD where they, as Pete mentioned earlier in the pod, the Lakers changed up their rotation. It was AD who started the second quarter with the rest of that bench unit, Pete, that had been playing well instead of LeBron.
And just a small point to add to that, because of that, I believe 6 of our 8 lineups last night had played less than 10 or 5 minutes together. It was something like that over the course of the regular season. And so that's part of my point about like doing new in the playoffs. I actually liked the lineups by and large. We went too small to start the fourth, but by and large, I liked what we were doing. But it's like these 5 have not played together.
They went too small to start the fourth. They also went too small to close the third. Mm-hmm. So Darvin went to this group at the end of the first quarter because AD went out. So it was LeBron and Rui and then smaller players. So it was like Prince and then it was 2 guards. And that lineup was fairly effective at the end of the first quarter because Aaron Gordon was not in the game. Mm-hmm. And so Jokic was in the game, but Aaron Gordon was not. And so it was Peyton Watson as the other forward. And that just allowed a certain amount of like, okay, well, we can get away with this a little bit more. Darvin went to that same group in order to close the third quarter, but Gordon was no longer in foul trouble. Mm-hmm. So he was in the game. And the Lakers played a group with LeBron and Rui at power forward and center against a front court that had Jokic and Gordon. And they were getting tattooed on the glass and at the rim, and Jokic was scoring inside. I understand the idea of what the team was trying to do in those parts of the game, and it was a little bit hit and miss. The hit part, though, was because Gordon was not in the game. So now I'm going to get back to Jackson Hayes. The Lakers need to play their biggest and best athletes in the series against a team that has bigger players and better athletes than you do.
This was the lesson of last year's series too, if you were watching it. Yeah.
I'm not saying this is going to win them the series. I'm not saying Jackson Hayes is going to be this huge difference maker. I'm not acting like he's going to shut down Jokic or make sure that Aaron Gordon doesn't get every single rebound or doesn't tip the ball out. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about how one player can slot into a lineup and functionally help that lineup better do a couple of things in which they are materially failing at over and over and over again against a team that has advantages in very specific ways.
D. Jackson Hayes is the only player on the team outside of Anthony Davis that can meet Aaron Gordon 11 feet above the ground. It's as simple as that. The types of tapouts that you're talking about, Hayes is the only guy that's capable of it.
And so I want Hayes to play more. I want him to play with Anthony Davis in lineups. And so I was happy with the lineup that played against the Jokic-less Nuggets, where it's just like, okay, you're going to then spam AD post-ups against a smaller group and then, in theory, run pick and rolls with D'Lo and Hayes in order to try to be bigger and more athletic around the paint against a Nuggets team that doesn't necessarily have their dudes. The Nuggets had to play DeAndre Jordan in those minutes, and AD cooked him, as he should.
And then we went away from it entirely in the second half. There was a shift, man, where DJ was on the court and like AD did not get the ball, Mike.
What was the game, man, this was not long ago, but where LeBron and Rui were just attacking everything on the glass?
There was a Milwaukee game. But LeBron didn't play in the Milwaukee games.
It was the first New Orleans game, Mike, on Sunday.
Was it the
Mike.
First New Orleans? Yes, the end of the regular season game?
It was a Sunday game.
They were just like, you guys aren't getting a rebound, especially in the first half. And I didn't see that against, you know, that type of effort. So I think that this goes back again to how difficult Denver, all of the things that Denver asked you to do, though, in a different way. And of course, this is mostly Jokic centered, but where they're not worried as much about New Orleans in the sense of like, if we're not on this particular defensive assignment, other than, you know, certainly LeBron on Zion, but like Rui in that case then didn't have a matchup where he was going to be super worried in that case. And so how do you free up either LeBron or Rui to help AD on the glass more? And I guess I'm still talking about rebounding.
Thank you for that, Mike. I'm glad you're still talking about rebounding. We need to keep talking about rebounding. Whenever I talk to people, I'm like, yeah, we can shoot now, but we can't get a rebound. And so thank you for that. We'll talk about adjustments in a sec. For me, though, I really want to emphasize a big part of this is we just cannot completely fall apart for 2 to 3 minute stretches. I mean, there's like a 20-point stretch. There's like 20 points in there where it's just like very basic. Don't throw the ball directly to the other team. Run back on defense. Just do your job type of stuff.
They went on a 20-4 run in that third quarter, I think, or in the wraparound. And it's just sort of just like, oh, yeah, Denver's a really good basketball team. You can't continue to give them chances, though. To Mike's point about the rebounding, Pete, Denver's going to stress the Lakers rebounding. It's just what it is.
That's right. And you have to be ready for that and have a plan for that.
I was about to wrap my Jackson Hayes point. He needs to play with AD. He also needs to play with LeBron and Rui. Like, I get it, man. I get it. You want to try to be fast and be athletic and have shooting on the court. I get it. I get that there's a very logical idea of you need to be able to score against the Nuggets in order to beat them. My thing is, though, is if you don't rebound, then you're not going to generate the type of offense that you actually think you're going to generate with a shooting group. And you're not creating enough advantage in the half court in order to play the beautiful game you want to play. The Lakers have the ability to be a rock fight team, Mike, and they don't get into as many rock fights as they should get into considering some of the personnel they have at their disposal. LeBron and AD can be rock fight players. Jackson Hayes can help you in a rock fight. Rui can help you in a rock
Gabe
fight.
And Dinwiddie.
Austin Reeves, Gabe Vincent, Spencer Dinwiddie, they can help you in a rock fight. I thought Prince was really good as well. The game got away from the Lakers. They won the first half by 3 points. They tied them in the fourth quarter. And they lost the third quarter by 14 points, and so they lost by 11. That was the game. And we can get into adjustments, and I think we should pivot here. But I think a key adjustment should be like Jackson Hayes needs to play more than one shift. And the one shift, and if he is going to play one shift, it's just like it needs to be longer. He needs to play with that LeBron and Rui group at the end of the first quarter. He needs to wrap around then and play with AD in the start of the second and the fourth quarters. I think he can help you in lineups where Denver is playing Gordon and Jokic. I think he helps free up AD to do more defensively and on the glass, when in reality, AD was the only Laker doing anything defensively in the paint and on the glass. Allow the athlete to help you be more athletic, I think, is my like first plea in terms of adjustments.
I'm so glad you guys emphasize rebounding as much as you have. I just want to give a little bit of attention to the offense within this as well. The third quarter was a disaster. I know Cran just really focuses on how much we run organized offense. I think he's spot on with this point. I think it's more of a symptom than a cause. I think it's more of a symptom. It's like the same reason why guys don't run back on defense. They don't crack down on a cut. They don't sandwich rebound. These are all in the same family to me about our inability to sustain. But we squander so many possessions. One of the bad twos I thought that we took was a D'Lo possession where Aaron Gordon had switched out onto him. And D'Lo decided, hey, one-on-one against Aaron Gordon, let's go. And he ends up chucking up a very difficult, like 17 footer that misses. And it's like, that's a bad possession. And we have so many possessions where, and the maddening thing about it is in the first half, we were running a lot of organized stuff. And the thing is that as LeBron has gotten older, AD was fantastic at this, in this game, but that you have the best guy on the court that can score whenever he wants to, the way Jokic can in a lot of ways. Like LeBron used to be that guy, but he's 39. And so you have to rely more on the system that you run, on running set action. It can't just be five sets of one-on-one players out there. And so that to me is part of that inability to sustain. And so switching gears to the adjustments, the big thing for me, Mike, is I thought AD did a great job on Jokic. They have absolutely figured out the Rui thing. They did a long time ago, frankly. And we stuck with the Rui thing with Rui on him way too long. I think that it can be okay if you're in that doubling sort of situation. But again, they don't even give the ball to Jokic directly all that often when Rui is on him. They just run ball screens. And so it's like it puts Rui in the unfamiliar position of being the big guy in a drop. And Rui doesn't jump super high from a dead standstill. And so it's a recipe for being not very good. On the flip side, though, Mike, I thought that was some of the best one-on-one defense AD has played against Jokic. And in particular, the ability to fight back against the boom boom that Jokic likes to give him and walk him under the basket. So that to me is where the adjustments start, particularly on defense, is more AD on Joker.
Yeah, more AD on Joker. I mean, AD got asked about this and it reminded me a little bit of the conversation around like Giannis and like at what point is he going to switch over to take the primary threat because they like to keep Giannis off the ball and some of those Bucks theories. And I get there have been so many games where the theory of AD off of Jokic means that he can help on Jokic. And you guys were explaining in the text thread last night and alluded to a little bit today that Denver has kind of also figured out where if AD's not on Joker, then where to go with the offense so that he is not able to come over and help as much and have become really good at reading that. And so, yeah, the obvious answer to that then is, okay, so I guess more AD on Jokic. And then how does that help with things down the chain defensively in the half court? And then how does that help? How does that work like from a rebounding standpoint? If AD's on Jokic more and, you know, Jokic is either pulling him out a little bit or at least AD has to go all the way through a contest. And then to have him also be your prime rebounder, that's going to pull on Rui and pull on LeBron and get right back into a little bit of the rebounding battle. But I think that's something that they'll certainly try more. And, you know, Darvin Ham hinted at that there are some adjustments. There are some other ways, other looks that they have for Jokic. And I think that we'll probably see that happen. My question then is, okay, so if AD is going to be asked to do this, which is just more taxing even than the hard job that he already had on defense, then who's going to pick up some of what the slack is where he was really the main offensive threat not only did he take the most shots, he also got to the free throw line 9 times. You know, he really was awesome. And I think that's an equation where kind of as we talk about throughout the season, the Lakers do have other guys that can step into more offensive usage. LeBron only took 16 shots in 41 minutes. Austin only took 9 shots. Like certainly Rui. You can get more from them. Rui only took 4 shots in his 31 minutes. And so that can be spread around. And we've seen the Lakers win games when AD doesn't shoot a lot. So that certainly, I think, is worth trying. The larger point behind this is just the mental blow that the Lakers took by coming out, playing really well, taking a lead, and then seeing Denver chop it down in like 2 minutes. I thought that did have they were in at least somewhat of a funk in the second quarter and then the third. And then, you know, as they were fighting back, I think Denver was pretty comfortable and not really threatened when the Lakers were trying to get back into it. And so it made it, you know, they tied and it was 25 all in the fourth quarter. But that AD adjustment is one that I think will happen. And so I would kick to Darius then. What are the possible other buttons that get pressed if you got your hand on that one, you know, what's the one that you can't cover?
Yeah, so I agree that AD should guard him more. I also think that they should still be doubling some in order to help AD and not have to have him absorb all of those like earthquake hits that he's going to take when Jokic is trying to back him down. Jokic can back down pretty much any player in the league if you just let him continue to move up against the wall. He is very juggernaut-esque in that way. It's just like, I'm just going to lean on you.
He seems very inevitable.
And I'm going to win.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, he's just a big, strong dude that has excellent footwork and understands angles, he's going to get to spots where it's just like, now I have leverage. And it's just like, well, when you're that big and you have leverage, guess what? We saw that with Shaq for a bunch of years. I don't think Jokic is as big and as strong as Shaq, but in this league, in the era that he plays in, he is essentially the equivalent of that.
Jokic plays so much like Magic Johnson did, the way that Magic played against guards, you know, because a lot of times Magic was guarded by somebody. So he wasn't guarded by the same size guys that Jokic is, but a very similar type of dynamic where it's like, it's just like dad against his little kid and on game point and he wants to win the game type of basketball.
So you guys are 100% like, okay, AD is going to have to guard him more, but I also think that they should still be doubling. They should still be rotating. I want to talk about a couple of offensive adjustments. I would love to see LeBron in the screen and roll more, and I'd love to see him in the screen and roll more with whoever is being defended by Murray. We talked about this in the preview pod, and we talked about this some in the text thread. Pete, you sent us a great text where it's just like, this is an idea that can work where it's LeBron, Austin pick and roll when Murray and Gordon are in the action, and then AD is in the dunker spot. The Lakers can play tic-tac-toe a little bit and force Gordon to do the things that Denver is forcing Rui to do. Now, Gordon is better at that stuff than Rui is. And so there's a false equivalence there that I don't want to lurk too far towards. But Gordon is going to be worried about LeBron. And one of the things that Denver did is that they said, we're going to switch. And then we're going to switch and we're going to swarm. And if they switch a guard onto LeBron James, that's when he can start to post up and then start to leverage the idea of I can attack in isolation and then put Jokic in help situations where it's AD that is then going to be the beneficiary of that stuff on the backboards. I do not think this is as much of a LeBron on ball series as one would think. Aaron Gordon is too good on the ball, and he has enough athletic advantages against a 39-year-old LeBron, as he should, to say, LeBron, just go out there and be a point guard the entire time. I actually think that this series should mirror more of what the Lakers did against Memphis in the first round last season, when the guards took up a bigger load of offensive usage as ball handlers. But then guess what, guys? That means D'Angelo Russell, you got to be better, you got to be sharper. Austin Reeves, you got to be better, you got to be sharper. This is at the level now where this is a conference finals level matchup. And if the ball's going to be in your hands, no more of that lazy bounce pass ahead to Rui and then raise your hand and say, my bad, that was me. Yeah, bro, we all saw that was your bad. They got to be sharp. And they gotta find ways to hit AD and LeBron in the pocket with these passes against a team that is very good at defending that specific action. And I think that that's a way to get the offense going.
Just in fairness, that was Russell's only turnover, right? That one in transition, and LeBron had seven.
Yes.
So just in fairness.
That speaks to my point about him being an on-ball player.
Right,
though.
No, absolutely.
Right, and so it's just like he had seven turnovers and he was the one who was handling the ball.
Yeah, Jokic had zero.
So
zero turnover for Jokic.
There are a couple of fundamental issues that I think D'Lo has with Denver, and it has to do with the size of the guy they put on the ball. Michael Porter Jr. is an example of this, where he'll give D'Lo back pressure, and D'Lo's good at putting that guy in jail, right, and then creating some separation when they're smaller. But Michael Porter's so much taller than him that he just kind of puts his arms up over him, and D'Lo has to move forward enough to where, like, the floater is flat. It's a very difficult shot, and he missed several of them. Those shots are the ones that Austin is really good at. Those sort of like tight in between, leaning off of 1 foot type of thing, where you got to avoid the back contest, but also avoid the guy in front of you, but still get up a quality shot. And that's something I saw us go to more in that fourth quarter. So I think that I'm curious, Mike and D, your thoughts of like where Austin fits into this, because I believe that he is the guy that is most equipped to move LeBron more off of the ball. And I know, and just, I don't want to make your point for you, D, but it's not like an entirely either or thing, right? LeBron's going to have the ball, of course. But I do think that distributing that responsibility and having a guard that can really get points out of those type of situations, if you're going to run that many ball screens, you also have your Spains and your stacks and things like that that you can attack. Although Denver was showing a lot higher on their screens in that one, and they're very prepared for these type of situations. So sorry, I went all over the place a little bit there, Mike, but Austin, I think, is a key figure in terms of getting these grimy buckets that you need to get.
Well, I think that was, I'm certainly in agreement. That was the one of the main points I was trying to make in the preview pods, was that this is a matchup where if you can, like, you're going to need so much from LeBron physically at the rim, that helping AD, banging with Jokic, banging with Aaron Gordon, just doing all of these things with the, what the requisite side is. And Austin can do, especially against Denver guards that aren't amazing. You know, KCP is certainly excellent, but he sometimes won't be on Austin. It might be Murray or it might be somebody else. Like, there are advantages that Austin can get, especially because Denver is loaded up in other places. And I thought, you know, he was 5 for 9. Like, he was 2 for 6 from three. He had 3 assists, 0 turnovers. Like, and he just didn't have a lot of opportunity. And I, like, we know that he can do it. Austin was maybe, like, I don't want to say that. Clearly, he was their third best player in the postseason. But, like, he may have had his best series against Denver last year. And let me pull up his numbers to underpin my point. But this was, like, part of the main reason that we were so excited about what Austin's year had been, because it wasn't like it was just got good, but then it slinked off once they got to the bigger playoff matchup.
So he was there for it.
He averaged 21 points on 55% shooting and 56% from three against Denver, 5.3 assists to 1.8 turnovers last year in 39.8 minutes. So he was awesome against Denver. And I think that that's because of the way that their physicality is more geared towards the rim, and he can get going on the perimeter, and then he's got some of the pull-up stuff. And as good as Denver is at the rim, they're also not like a shot-blocking team necessarily. Right. It's more just like keeping you out of that area. So, yeah, I thought that was going to be part of the plan in the first place. And, you know, I think that it just – the way that the game evolved, it was like LeBron early and then keep on going back to AD and then Austin – sorry, and then D'Lo calling his own number a lot. And that led to Austin not having those same opportunities. So, to me, this is not like, oh, Austin Reeves needs to do more. It's like you got to let him do more and help him do more.
I do think there's an element with D'Lo, too, of like this is the shot at redemption, right? This is the big, bad Denver Nuggets that he had such a bad series against last year. And I remember it when sometimes that can really wind up a player too much where it's like, I'm going to come out and I'm going to be aggressive, which is great. You always want guys to be aggressive, but a lot of times guys will pre-read when that happens, meaning that they're going to go into the play being like, I'm going to get this up. And sometimes that's not the correct play to make. Sometimes it is that pocket pass to ADD.
It is. And I'm going to be defiant here, man. Denver, yes, they've won all of these games in a row. They're favored. They should be favored in this series. They are the defending champs. The Lakers have way more avenues open to them in this series than what they had last season and even what they had earlier this season. And I think there are real ways for them to put pressure on this Nuggets team in ways that Denver may not face the entire playoffs again until maybe they have to play in the finals. Like, and I'm just being serious about that. Other teams can test them too. I'm not trying to elevate the Lakers to this insane level. I'm just saying they have specific challenges that they can present. And I thought in game one, they did it some, they didn't do it enough. I do think that Denver has entryways on defense to attack when they go to this bench unit and it's DeAndre Jordan and Reggie Jackson, you have entryways. When it's Jamal Murray and they're willing to switch, you have entryways. And the Lakers need to pinpoint the entryways and attack. The thing I will end on is that LeBron James has constantly said that game one is a feel-out game for him all of the time. And I thought that he showed the requisite amount of urgency early, but then the rest of the game was sort of feeling out and sort of retreated some as the game went another direction. The Lakers know if they are going to have a chance in this series at all, they need to split in Denver these opening two games. Game two is tomorrow on Monday. The Lakers are going to need to give their best effort. And I think that if they're going to do it, it's going to be because they have made a few adjustments. And I do think that when they go back on tape, they're going to see the areas where they can attack a little bit more and be stronger defensively in the ways that they need to be stronger defensively.
And for the first time against Denver, they have tape of them outplaying Denver in a situation where Denver was not ahead by a lot, right? Whether it was a 3-0 series lead and Lakers go ahead big at the beginning of game four, or the way that almost every game against them had gone prior to this is that where they jump out ahead of early. Lakers played good basketball, just not for nearly long enough. And they also have those avenues that D is talking about. So we will be back after the game to discuss how game two went. But until then, you've been listening to the Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
The Angels got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out in front. Broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic got it. Magic fires. It's good. The Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game.
Rebound to Vlade. 3 seconds left. Van Exel the winner. It's on the way. Good.
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. Shaq with his eighth block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Ready pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move. Two. One.
Miss it.
Bryant. Unbelievable. For the victory. It's over.
Shot clock now to five. Bryant.
Yeah.
And that was a little tap to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis, 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good! Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers! James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.